Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends. I am your host, Jason Hobbs. And like I mentioned last episode, we're back at it with a regular time and a regular schedule with some awesome guests. This episode is no different. We've got an Annie award-winning, gold Annie award-winning cartographer, Glenn Seal. How's it going, Glenn?
Hey, how are you doing, everybody? Hi, Jason. How are you?
I am fantastic. One of the great things about doing this show is getting to talk to people that I probably would never get to talk to otherwise.
Yeah, well, thanks ever so much for having me on. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being on. So if you guys don't know Glenn by his name, I would be stunned. But he is the man behind Monkey Blood Designs. Did you say you have a partner?
Yeah, not a business partner. My girlfriend, her son, and me. We're working on a Kickstarter at the moment. Yeah.
So. All right. So you had mentioned that, and I was like, "Oh, I didn't know you had a partner. I thought you were a one man show."
I'm getting to the point where I think I need a business partner. not enough hours in the day.
All right, and so I would say your biggest known thing is probably the Midderlands. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think. That's the most content that I've probably ever created for something. Three Kickstarter books at 224 pages each, midazines at 24 pages a shot. You know, there's probably 700-800 pages worth of content. So yeah, that's been a real big thing in the last 3 years, 4 years.
Yeah, two Annie nominations and one win. So that's pretty awesome.
Oh, wow. Yeah. The first Annie win was mind-blowing. And, getting a nomination is significant as a small publisher. But, yeah, getting a medal is next level.
For sure. I want to talk about that later, too. So
yeah, sure.
Hold on.
Okay, I'll write myself in.
Often we talk about how we met each other. You're in the UK, obviously. We have never met at this point. But I guess I'm aware of you from all of your products and stuff. Apparently you listen to the show, or are you aware of it?
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew me before that, I guess.
Google Plus really was such an important hub for role playing, you know, small publishers and things like that. And it's from there that I kind of found everybody, and I found this fantastic environment. And I'm sure it was on there. Probably before, maybe I knew about Hobbs and Friends and you kind of about at the same time and all the other guys that are now doing sort of anchorite-y stuff.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot. You had an anchorite show. You've done a few episodes, not many, right?
Yeah. It comes down to my kind of restrictions on time, really. I mean, I don't tend to stop. And what I need to do is, because this is full time, I need to focus my energies on things that are paying bills and things. So it's very difficult to measure effects of podcasting for me to know whether it's helping, you know, run the small publishing side of things or not. But it's a really good format for just saying what's on your mind.
Yeah, for sure. I have one myself, so.
and I listen to it as well.
Oh, okay, well, thank you. That is a fascinating subject for me, I think, is that concept of becoming, you know, doing the dream in gaming, and that's all that you do. You do it full time, but I don't know, man. It sounds pretty risky.
Well, I mean, the kind of history of that is that I worked in the security industry in the UK for when I left school. So there was a lot of stress and anxiety and all manner of things that were making me really unhappy. But I'd started doing the Monkey Blood Design stuff while I was still there, and it was kind of an escape. I was using it as escapism to go and do something that I got a lot of pleasure from. So I wasn't being fulfilled in what I was doing, you know, day in, day out. But I was really getting fulfilled by doing this thing out of hours. And I'd got to the stage where it may possibly be worth, you know, it would be a struggle, but I might just about be able to make it pay some of the bills. And then it was just having the courage to kind of just sever the one thing and focus on doing what you enjoy. And to me, the risk far outweighed how I was feeling at the time.
That's so awesome.
I kind of thank anxiety for where I am now, which is ironic.
When you say securities, do you mean like bonds and stock markets, or like you were guarding things?
Yeah. So closed circuit television, access control, integrated systems, intercom, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah. If anybody wants to have a map with, security systems all over it, I'm quite good at that.
Nice. So I hear you talk about writing and making maps and now drawing. What do you actually play any games?
I run a Midlands campaign of my own, and that's face to face with my guys, and I also play in a Coriolis the Third Horizon game, which is also face to face, and that's kind of a slight departure from OSRE type gaming, but I love the setting and the kind of the imagination that I've got when I'm playing in that world. I just think, you know, that kind of Middle Eastern sci-fi vibe, you know. They call it Prince of Persia, Arabian Nights in Space. I think that's how they term it. And I just got really hooked on that. I thought it was a really great way to describe it, and you know, all in.
I feel like I've heard of it before. That's using that's Mutineer Zero system, right?
Yeah, same system as that. They for each kind of setting they do, they kind of tweak the mechanics for it. So Tales from the Loop, Mutant Year Zero, and Coriolis all use the same underlying system, which is D6 dice pulls, and sixes are successes, and the more sixes you get, the better.
Okay, so awesome.
It's quite simple. Yeah, it's a pretty simple system, but it works well.
So in your Midderlands campaign, are your guys currently in Great London?
They are in Great London, yes. Yeah, so. They weren't. I had to shepherd them in.
Of course.
I forced them in, railroaded them in. No. It wasn't a railroad, honest.
I've listened to John Large's a little bit. Have you ever seen that from Red Dice Diaries?
Yes. Yeah, and another fellow podcaster who does a bit on Anchorite is playing in that as well, Colin Spike Pit.
Yeah, he's been getting a lot of publicity on this show lately. I think I'm going to have Colin and his brother on here and call it Two Boots in a Trunk. What do you think?
No, I don't. Do that.
I should talk about what I've been playing. Kalmata, obviously. Almost every Sunday we play now. And Colin and Arfed, his brother Darren, played last session. So that was pretty fun. I think they're both playing maybe tomorrow. I'm not sure.
I have another. Where does Colin get all the time?
Gardeners, man, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I need to get into gardening, I think. Maybe he's developed some kind of time machine that he can keep going back and playing in other games.
I have Best Served Cold, which it was started as a 1-to-1 game, but since I tried to, my Lost in a Goddess session fell apart, I added some more people to that, which is kind of a deserty Arabian Nights maybe game. And then we actually started playing an Osric game with, this is online, Jose Hoffman, Brasco, and Thaddeus Moore, Patches, who we talk about quite a bit.
I know Thaddeus Moore. He did some Midlands patches for me.
Yeah, for sure. So have you ever played Osric?
No. I've got a load of OSR rule books, but I don't have the Osric book.
I can tell you that it's supposedly, you know, a rewriting of AD&D. And it's just as bad, honestly, in a lot of the same places when you get confused about specialization, double specialization, if you're trying to go by the rules as written and all these things, it's kind of a pain in the butt. All we're doing is going through all of the Osric adventures that were written. Which is kind of a cool thing. And what is that? Stuart Marshall and Matt Finch wrote Osric, I guess. And Jose is running it. And one of the guys is a fighter who is double specialized in daggers with an 1803 strength. So he's getting like 10 million attacks every round and hitting with daggers that do D4 plus 6 damage or something like that. I don't know, but it's sick. And then there's a double specialized ranger with a bow, which is just as ridiculous as it was in AD&D. So there you go. That game is dumb.
Rangers were always my kind of go to, you know.
Really?
I was growing up, I always wanted rangers because they just seemed so sort of versatile. They had access to quite a lot of stuff, and it was kind of, it was a bit fightery, it was a little bit thiefy, and you know, and you got range weapons, they were always the characters that I wanted to play. But now I really enjoyed playing a fighter with a great axe. Can't beat it. Right, die 20, get all the dices and all the damage. Brilliant.
Do you always play a I guess that's what I meant to ask you. What system are you using to run your Midderlands game?
Swords and Wizardry Complete.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
so do you have some rangers in that?
None of the characters are playing rangers. Oh, blimey. It's been a few weeks since I last played. And
honestly, I don't like the writing of the Ranger in Swords and Wizardry Complete. I like that system, but I don't like that Ranger very well.
Yeah. I think that's why in a lot of systems, as I've got older, and I'm less influenced by the skills and all the abilities and the min-maxing and all that. I just want to play something that's fun to play and you know, have some fun.
Yeah, and any system can really do that. It's all in how you play it and how the players are going to do it. I'm mostly running old school Essentials BX in almost all
Gavin
games
Norman's
that I'm running. Yep. I can tell you that I just got my hard copy of Low Fantasy Gaming. Have you ever seen that? By Steven Grodzicki.
Yeah, it's that Pickpocket Press, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So here we are. We're dropping all the names. This is awesome.
Yeah, let's just do it. Let's make this an advertising episode.
So
actually, before we do that, let's drop a load of my stuff in.
I thought we did. I thought we covered most of it.
I've got loads of them.
All right. Well, you said that you had a KS. You want to talk about that right now?
Yeah, so I've got a Kickstarter running called Handy Maps, and it's basically A5 cards. Each card's got a map on both sides. They're not labeled. They're not. They don't have a compass map on there. There's no information. But it's a basic town and village layout, town or city or whatever. And there are 10 cards in the set, so there's effectively 20 maps. And it's just a Kickstarter for supplying the cards anywhere in the world. And the difference in this campaign really is that I wanted to find something that was a pretty straightforward Kickstarter to run to show my partner's son, Matt, how Kickstarters worked, because he's doing business studies and economics in sixth form at school. And obviously he's not 18 yet, so this is all my risk. But he's helped with the page. We spent a day yesterday just going back through the costs and looking at the sources of marketing and referrals and where backers are coming from. And it's just really interesting. And it's doing really, really well. Funding goal was £1,300. It's probably $1,500 or something. And we're at 6,300 almost, I think, pounds. Yeah, it's like nearly almost 500% funded. So we're absolutely blown away.
Are you laminating the cards? Are you having them printed? Or how big are the cards? A5, you said. Okay.
A5, yeah. So that's it's kind of digesty size, I guess. But yeah, what we wanted to do is for you to be able to just write on them in pencil or pen. So they're like it's like a matte uncoated finish. But they're 400 GSM, so they're card quite thick. Nice. And I did think about gloss laminating them so you could use a dry wipe. But I actually find that a little bit frustrating if you're using it a lot, because you tend to rub it off with your hands and stuff. And we decided against that and just thought, you know what, you can scribble on these to your heart's content with a pencil.
Awesome. So you kind of talked about how you got into the monkey blood design thing. How did you start getting into cartography to begin with?
To be honest, that was Google Plus and drawing maps to... actually, if we go back to when I first got onto Google Plus, I was painting miniatures and posting pictures of the miniatures I painted. And then I started to see people posting maps, you know, Dyson and people like that, Matt Jackson. And I thought, oh yeah, I love making maps. So I started to draw some, and I've still got pictures of a couple of the ones I created, you know, at that time when I first got onto G+, and I look back at them now and I'm like, oh, it's embarrassing, that is.
That's interesting. So would you say that Dyson and Matt were your inspirations?
Yes, Dyson, Matt Jackson, Mike Schley, Jonathan Roberts. I think he was Fantastic Maps. He did some Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Maps, yeah. So those guys, when I first got on, I was looking at their stuff and going, oh, my, wow. I love this stuff. So, from kind of then on, that's what I got into. And I remember there's a guy called Shane Harsh. He was the first person to contact me and say, I really like what you're doing here. Is there any chance that you could draw some maps for me and I'll pay you? And I was like, yeah.
So without really knowing
the mechanism for that, but yeah.
We should probably say Shane, he made some stuff for Hero Fantasy first.
Yeah.
What's the name of his? Doesn't he have like a setting? What's it called?
Neurosia.
Yep. Neurosia. Yep. That's exactly right. Have you ever played that, or did you just did some maps for it?
I just did some maps, but as part of that, we ended up doing an online game just so we could explain the scenario and stuff. And I was in that with Brendan LaSalle and some other guys. And I met Brendan recently at UK Games Expo. He was with Bruce Cunnington, and he came over and I shook his hand and I said, we've played in a game, you know. And he went, really? And I said, yeah, with Shane Harsh and Rosie. And he was like, oh yeah, when I'd hurt my leg and stuff. So I did meet him.
I'm pretty sure I played in a game with Shane because he ran Fantasy Hero for the DSR Drink Spin Run crew, being Adam Miscavige and Don Stroud. I also met him last year at Origins. I've known Shane for quite a while just from the Hero Forums games boards, which I was on well before G+ ever became what it was for the hub, like you mentioned. So you're also doing some art now, it looks like. The stuff looked pretty cool, I thought.
Yeah, I've always really enjoyed art. When I left school, I had the choice to go and do technical drawing, which is what I ended up doing, and then that kind of evolved over years. But I got accepted to do graphic design at a local college, so it was a choice: do I do graphic design and go to college, or do I start to learn a job and a trade doing something I really enjoy, technical drawing?
Interesting.
So yeah, I've always really enjoyed art and drawing, and technical drawing as well. So that's more map kind of thing. I've I used to, for a living, most days mark up plans for installation work, running conduits and camera locations and stuff. So maps is kind of a thing. I just love drawing. I love creating something and looking at it and going, actually, I've just drawn that. How did that happen?
Are most of your maps fantasy? Do you do like sci-fi or like building plans for modern heist games, or have you done anything like that or no?
Yeah, I've done sci-fi maps and things. I did a lot of sci-fi stuff for Venger Satanis and Corthalis Publishing. Okay. And they're like spaceship maps and space station maps and all that kind of thing. And I just use slightly different technique. Not all of that is hand drawn. I can use Affinity Designer and things like Visio to create things, and then just post-process a lot of stuff in Photoshop to get, tears on it and coffee stains and all that.
Awesome. So you kind of mentioned you have a blog, right?
Yeah, it's part of my website, monkeyblooddesign.co.uk. So there's a blog on there.
And one of the recent posts you put on was basically how you feel about dealing with people in the OSR that some people would call toxic, or just with the with the way that the OSR has been split into tiny pieces, and the political upheaval that seems to be drawing those pieces to different sides. You want to talk a little bit about that blog post and working with Wenger?
The blog post is up there, and I kind of made a decision to kind of stop doing work for Corthalis, and Wenger was actually really good about my decisions and the things that were going on around that time, and my concerns. And what this is mainly about is that when you're a small publisher, or when you are a freelancer, the relationship with your client can have a direct impact on you. So if you have a controversial client, you other people see you as having, it's kind of like other people see you as supporting and having the same views as that person. And whilst most people might not think like that, and that's great, because that's the case, others don't necessarily do that, and I don't think you can stop that. So I kind of just got to the point where I thought, this is getting a bit anxious for me, and given all of the things that have happened previously in my working life, I kind of try to avoid getting anxious about stuff, so I don't. And the only person that could change anything about that is always me. So I think there are always effects from people working with clients that can be controversial to a lot of people. And ultimately, you have to look after yourself, and I have to look after me in that. And that's kind of the history of it, really. And but it's a shame in the sense that, Venger was a really good client of mine, and we got on very well, in a creative environment, and the things that we were doing, and I really enjoyed that. There's you can't agree on everything.
That's true, and I mean it's it is sad, because like you say, if you have a good client and you're doing that's working, but then it can create issues with those who may not like that client. And so then you have guilt by association. And I talk about that all the time, obviously from my own situation. And I know a lot of people, small time people in the industry, trying to, carve out their own little area. And having those problems, because sometimes those guys, like a Wenger or a Macris or I don't even know, Grim Jim or whatever, they may have more openings because less pundit. People pundit that less people want to work with them. So then you might be able to get a start there. But if you do, then you're forever tainted by that, as far as some people are concerned. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. And I think I totally agree with you that it's a personal and private decision. So I appreciate you talking about that. So one of the other things, did you want to say anything else? Sorry.
No, I was just thanks for kind of hearing me out with that.
For sure. Another post that you did recently was how you felt about the Ennies. So in 2018, you were up for a cartography award. You got nominated, which I agree with you. Being nominated is really it's great to win, but being nominated is almost a bigger win in some ways. But people who win wouldn't say that, but the people who don't and got nominated say that, right?
Anyway, exactly.
You want to talk about how you feel about the Ennies compared, maybe even a little bit about last year and then this year, and where you know where that has you.
Yeah. So, I think the what tends to happen is I write a blog post and then I sit on it for a bit and just think, am I raging a little bit maybe too much, or is this coming out a bit neurotic or whatever? But I actually thought, you know what, this post is a reflection of how I feel about the Ennies and the process and stuff. And I think it's probably good to post it because other people can see how awards have an effect on small publishers, and they do, you know. And I know because I've experienced it. So the first, the 2018 Ennies, that was me submitting my first ever kickstarted book, well, first ever product to the Ennies. So I didn't know how that was going to pan out. And that was a real emotional roller coaster, but there was no expectation there. And that's, I think, fundamental to what happened then this year. So the nominations got announced in 2018 and I was on the list. I was like, oh my life, I can't believe that, because the nomination process is kind of peer reviewed, you know, people that, you know, judges are selected and they decide what products go in the category. So I felt incredibly honored to have got that nomination, genuinely at that point. And, so then to get the gold medal at that ceremony then was I just never expected it. I was watching the live stream in my kitchen at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, whenever it was, and I was up against Paizo, Green Ronin, and some other guys, and I thought to myself, in terms of fan votes, which is the second stage, there's no way I'll get more fan votes than Green Ronin or Paizo. And when I think Paizo got nominated for the silver, so at that point I thought, oh, you know, well, Green Ronin have got this. And then when they said the Midlands, I was, oh, blimey, I nearly fell over. But yeah, I was kind of shaking. But, you know, that's the effect that has on a small publisher. I was in the kitchen in the morning at 2 a.m. shaking because I just won a gold medal in the awards. That it was a significant moment.
Oh, for sure, man. I would say that your speech was all right, but
I was just going to mention that.
The person who did it was way better.
You know what my girlfriend said? The guy that did your speech did that really, really well. And I said, I said, that's Jason Hobbs.
She's like, who? Jason Hobbs, though. She's like, who?
Yeah, no, you did that fantastically well, and thank you so much for doing that. otherwise, there was just going to be and the gold medal goes to.
Sorry, Glenn couldn't be here. Yeah.
Tumbleweeds, is there anybody here? He's just won a gold medal. He's not even bloody here, the lazy bus.
It was kind of weird for me because I had just not won, right, my own nomination. Yeah. That was almost right after. Yeah. And I was like, oh, now I get to go up for Glenn. Jeez, what the heck?
Yeah. That would be like if I'd done that this year. So I'd, I didn't get one. And then I'm doing your speech for your gold. Yeah. So I can totally sympathize. So, but yeah, thank you.
No problem whatsoever. That was a super nice gift when you sent me the Great London. So I appreciate that.
I was just going to say then about this year getting the, failing to win a medal. I say failing, I didn't fail. I got a nomination, and as you mentioned earlier, I got a nomination. Mm-hmm. It would be nice to have got a medal. It was a much tougher category this year, and I was the only OSR product in the 2018 category. So I picked up a lot of OSR vote, whereas this year, Jacob Hurst, Swordfish Islands, and the guys that he's got with him, they're fantastic. So I'm glad that the guys who won a medal got a medal. But the feelings then, because there was a pressure on me because I'd got a gold last time, or I put a pressure on myself. The following day, I felt a little bit sort of down about the situation. And the only way to kind of explain that was a post. And I wanted to do that just so people understood what, the emotions of these kinds of things for a small publisher. And hopefully if people read that post and then understand more about the Ennies and take some time out to vote for, people that they want to. I know people think that maybe they're not necessarily that valuable, to them, but to the people that are submitting things, they're hugely valuable.
Yeah.
So support your small publishers.
I totally understand how it feels, for sure. So, and it's still, I didn't even turn anything in this year. So that's, I only turned it in on a lark last year. So this year I didn't really want to do that again. When you are sitting there and waiting and finding out, like you say, so excited about the people who did win, but there still is a feeling like, man, what could I have done differently? And sometimes it's nothing, right? Because you're no longer in charge of it. After you get nominated, there's nothing you can do. And it feels really awkward because I'm standing in my business networking meeting in Little Rockford, Illinois, and trying to get those people to vote who have never listened to my show. I'm going to listen to one episode and go vote, because it's all popularity now. And my popularity is all over the place. It's not like you said, some bigger groups who have a much larger audience of not even the people that necessarily listen to that show. Like Call of Cthulhu people at the time, they're all going to vote for the Call of Cthulhu show that's been on for 10 years.
Yeah,
and has 10,000 listeners, right? My show has been on for 2 years now, and so it's a little different.
Yeah, I think what happened then is I made the post. I thought, well, that's an accurate reflection of what I'm feeling right now. But yeah, I've kind of got over myself now, and I'm kind of fine with it. And if nothing else, what it does is encourages me to carry on and be better at the things that I'm doing, and accept that actually, the nomination's fantastic, my product was one of five that were above all of the other products, in terms of cartography, that were selected by all of those judges who I don't know, so that you know, take that and let that sink in, Glenn, you know, because you earned that. So yeah, I'm happy with the nomination.
That's fantastic, man. It is good. It is. Congratulations. You deserve it. I feel like your cartography transcended just the OSR. For anyone who looked at it would definitely be like, oh, this is awesome. And they could certainly use Midderlands in any game system. So it has value to
thank you.
Lots and lots of people. All right. So, I guess I'll ask you one quick question, and we've mentioned G+ quite a few times today. What do you think about how is that going to affect the OSR in the future?
I think people tend to evolve, don't they? You know, if you're passionate about something, you'll evolve to the next incarnation of whatever it is. You know, it used to be blogs and prior to me, you know, discovering G+. And it's kind of a shame that people have that there was no single focus or single place to go, so that everybody that was already, like, that whole community couldn't just pick itself up and go and plonk itself in a new environment. But you know, that's just life.
I think part of the reason for that is because it was never really a community like people think about communities. It was just disparate groups of people who came together on Google+ to talk about the things they loved. But now that it wasn't Google+ anymore, they all kind of went their separate ways in their own little groups, is what my opinion is. I don't know, which is why you see the splintering, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I came into, you know, if I discovered a segment of the old school, you know, the DIY scene now, I don't think that wherever I enter it now, I don't think I'd be able to make the inroads into it that I've made, which is a huge shame, you know, that, you know, actually Google+ created or facilitated the creation of Monkey Blood Designer where it is now. But anybody that's thinking of doing it, I would say you need to be across multiple social media environments to be able to kind of have a bit of reach.
Yeah.
Now that G+ has splintered.
Totally. I think I'm on most of them, not all of them, because there are so many of them that it's almost impossible. It would be a full-time job to be involved in all of them in any capacity, right? You can't just show up. You can't be a lurker. You actually have to involve yourself with people. So it's crazy.
And that's the thing. Yeah, because you know, I can create something and post it out to some social media networks, and the difficulty is, like you say, that becomes such a full-time thing, you know, just managing your social media. When you're doing that, you're not creating the things that you love doing that people can go, actually, this is really good. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of passion gone into this, because unfortunately, you only put 50% of your passion into it, because you're too busy trying to promote the last thing you did, you know. it's a kind of a bit of a struggle, but there's some tools out there that are kind of helping me keep on top of that, you know. And the reason that I moved to my own blog is because I can post out when I type the blog up and hit, you know, send, it can go out to my social media rather than me have to go in and post to every single thing. That's just, you know. But the other important factor is engagement. It's great sending a post out, but if you're not responding to comments and helping people out with their inquiries, you're missing opportunities to engage people, and that's very difficult to do when you've got a lot of social media. Hence, social media marketing managers. I need one, but I
can't pay
unfortunately
one.
I can't afford one, so it's me. See, in the middle of the night.
that's where Matt should have started. It shouldn't have been straight to KS. It should have just been social marketing guy.
I've been showing him, you know, it's not just as easy as having an idea, setting up a Kickstarter page, pressing launch, and then hoping it's going to fund. You know, there is so much to that you can do to help kind of promote it and to help see how people are arriving at your Kickstarter, understanding the referrals and trying to do that. I've got no experience in social media and marketing. Monkey Blood Design exists from a purely, I'm learning how to do all of this on the fly by the seat of my pants experience. So
that's the best guy, know, maybe.
I'm doing all right.
School of hard knocks, they say. All right. Well, I think this is a perfect time for me to show some appreciation to the people that show appreciation to me. So if you want to become a patron, like the people I'm about to announce, you should go to www.patreon.com/OSRN Hobbs, H-O-B-B-S. The people I'm shouting out are a couple of well-known people. James Malashevsky. Thank you so much, James Mal, for being a patron. Lord Burnick, Julian Burnick of his own creations and Spellburn. I think that's what they call it, if you ever heard of that crazy show. And Brian Rumble. Thank you guys, all of you, for being patrons of Hobbs and Friends. It's people like you that make a sell for me keep on doing this to my wife. I appreciate it. And then I can buy things like the Mitterlands from Glenn. Otherwise, I wouldn't. So thank you guys so much. So if people wanted to get in touch with you and talk about your Gloomium, where would they contact you?
The best place to go is my website. There's contact pages there. There's a store. There's the blog. You know, it's the first point of call, and you can find that at www.monkeyblooddesign.co.uk.
Nice. So I'm also on the Twitters. The show's Twitter feed is at OSRN Hobbs. And I have a personal one. You can contact me there at Hobbs Indeed. We have some groups on a group on Facebook, a group on MeWe. I would say the one I'm most at is the Audio Dungeon Discord. If you'd like to get that invite or send me an email, Hobbs@HobbsNFriends. You can go to my website, HobbsNFriends.com. So you got any last things you want the listeners to know, Glenn?
Thanks to anybody that's purchased any of my stuff and supported me. You are awesome. And I just want to say thank you to you, Jason, for letting me ramble. And I really appreciate that.
My pleasure, man. If anyone wants to call the show, 815-200-4894. Somebody use it, because no one has. And I got one. Glenn, thank you so much for being on the show and being able to give your speech on there. Maybe it was it was something, you know, it was fun. It was fun to go up there. Everyone was yelling my name. They all knew me at the awards, so I never would have. That's what people did. It was kind of weird. So anyway, they're like, the guy was like, oh, you're not Glenn? No.
Yeah, he's too much of a lazy ass. He's standing in his kitchen in the middle of England. He can't afford the plane ticket.
All right, guys. I think we're gonna send out with the new audio of Mr. Hobbs's Gamerhood by none other than TJ Drennan of Malodorous Miasma Meltdown fame. You guys, won't you be my gamer?
It's a beautiful day.